Off the Ball. GAA.
But what the man has done over the last decade has been sensational, really. I think if I had to categorise a word for him, I'd probably call him a snake. You know, he's just so quiet in what he does and he just slips around the place. And
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets.
Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Good evening and welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. And we will be watching Mexico versus South Africa for the duration of tonight's show. It is the first game of the 2026 World Cup. Just 103 more to go after tonight. It's an 8 p.m. kickoff. Dion Fanning in studio with us tonight to keep an eye on the events that unfold at Azteca Stadium. Also tonight we're going to be talking Gaelic football. Stephen Rochford is going to join us. Stephen O'Neill is going to join us from 8 p.m. to look ahead to the first weekend where there's real jeopardy. And I guess we get the first four teams into the quarterfinals as well in the All-Ireland Football Championship. So plenty on the line this weekend. From 7:30 though, we're going to be kicking things off with the basketball because David Wallstein of the New York Times is going to join us to talk about one of the most incredible games in NBA Finals history. The New York Knicks were down by 29 points after 2.5 quarters last night and managed to turn it around to win the game. It is the biggest turnaround, the biggest comeback in the history of the NBA Finals, which now means that the San Antonio Spurs need to match the biggest series comeback by coming from 3-1 down to beat the New York Knicks in these final three games. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to send us a WhatsApp message even. On News Round Duty is Eve Conway. Eve, how are you doing?
I'm good now. How are you?
Very well. Ben Symes is here as well. Ben, how are things?
All good.
And Dion Fanning is going to weigh in as well on what we've just been watching from the Azteca Stadium. Dion, break it down for us. What have we seen?
I think a good opening ceremony. It's on, it's done, it's over.
Well, sorry, my favourite thing is just happening now because we're watching the TV on mute and I see a very animated Kenny Cunningham and a very animated Richie Sadler. Lots of gesticulating, lots of arm movements. And I presume this is to do with the opening ceremony that we just watched.
You think it is? Well, you thought you were going to get more Shakira than just one song.
I unmuted it when I saw Shakira come on and I was like, right, now time for the real business. And she sang one song. She got Burna Boy on with her. They sang their official FIFA anthem and then she left.
Well, yeah, there'd been Mexican rockers on before that.
Right. And,
for me, that's kind of what you want to see in an opening ceremony. Old rockers given the stage, given a platform to just rock out. And the stadium, everyone in the stadium seemed to be really enjoying it, and that's all you can ask for.
It was full?
Looked full.
So you're going Mexican rockers.
I am.
World Cup champion so far, guys. What are we thinking?
Yeah, I think that's a solid one.
Do we know who the Mexican rockers were? Anybody?
Mana.
No.
Mana.
There you go. Yeah.
It's like I was going to ask, is there an opening ceremony that we can even compare this to? Like, it feels that Diana Ross is...
Well, Diana Ross is
the moment, yeah, but that's not really remembered for being an outstanding opening ceremony. It's just... the most iconic.
But that is the one. And I don't think, like, opening ceremonies in the World Cup don't have the same cachet, even though they try to hype it up as an Olympic opening ceremony, which is an event in itself, possibly because, you know, along with lots of other things in the Olympics, you know, it's like something people are just seeing for the first time or once every 4 years. So you're able to create an event out of that, whereas the World Cup is the real deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't need to mess around with this stuff. Even FIFA can't spoil that.
The only opening ceremonies worth watching are the Olympics, and the only halftime shows worth watching are the Super Bowl. So anything outside of those parameters...
I've one more for you. The Copa Sudamerica final in, I think, 2018 or 2019, Las Palmeiras came out on stage, and it was in Santa Fe. I think it might have been San Lorenzo. I can't remember the club, but basically they've adopted this. Las Palmeiras are like this like Argentinian institution. They actually accidentally played their song last week when Argentina were playing Honduras in a friendly. They said, "Here's the anthem of Argentina," and someone accidentally pressed that, and they think it was an inside joke because this song is like the anthem of Argentina, the unofficial anthem of Argentina. But they came out and sang it before the Copa Sudamerica final in 2018. Maybe 2019. There is literally grown men, families, adult children in floods of tears in the crowd, grabbing the cage in front of them, belting out every single word. The lads are in their 80s up on stage, like rocking it out. It's if anyone hasn't seen it, it's Copa Sudamerica final. If you look up Las Palmeiras Copa Sudamerica final, it's glorious viewing.
Mm-hmm. Just had an intrusive thought here. I just thought, like, with the age ranges in studio, I think we should do like our first World Cup memories. I mean, not sure. Do we, Dion? Can I ask you what your first World Cup memory
it's
is?
It's 1982.
Okay. Were you there for the first game? Not there for the first game, but like, is your memory, does it include the very first game? Is it kind of like a bursting into the senses moment?
No. What I could was the no. What was the first game in that World Cup? I don't remember watching it.
Spain versus Belgium.
But would it have been Spain? Because I think didn't it only start doing the host in 2006?
Could have been champions.
So it was Argentina then.
It was actually Italy versus Poland, the nil-all draw.
Yeah.
In Vigo.
Right.
I tell a lie. It was the champions. It was Argentina who started the World Cup. They were beaten by Belgium 1-0.
Argentina, Belgium. Yeah, so that's
in Barcelona.
Isn't that the game of the Maradona? The famous Maradona picture comes from. It's not actually from 86. I think it's from 82, isn't it? The picture of Maradona facing all the defenders.
Oh yes.
Oh.
After the free kick.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's from 82, not 86, because they played Belgium in 86 in the semi-final. But if you look at that picture, is I think 80 from 82.
It's quite the double header on that first night. It was Brazil versus Soviet Union in Seville.
I was watching. Little snippets, and I'm going to watch the whole thing. All the official films of the World Cup are on the FIFA Plus channel. And one of the ones I watched as a kid, which is the Gole, the official film of the 1982 World Cup, narrated by Sean Connery. And it's spectacular. It's a spectacular film of the World Cup. I was watching some of it with my son this week, and the footage of that, you know, some of those Brazil matches. Brazil, Scotland, Brazil, Soviet Union is amazing because you know you have because it's filmed. It's not it's not the television footage. It's film footage on a ground level. So you're seeing it at a totally different speed, and it's a beautiful thing. It's really beautiful, and the narration by Sean Connery is really magnificent.
Okay,
and there's these lines that lodge in your head, you know, about the whole thing and about that World Cup. So I recommend that
we should dig out some of that narration for 9 o'clock to play on the football show a little bit later on. But Sean Connery in 82, that's immediately on the list for after the game tonight. First World Cup, Eve?
2010 is, wow. I think, the final, because I would have been 8 years old, and I remember watching the final and my whole family was in the sitting room, and I think we were shouting for Spain.
You're the Vuvuzela generation.
Yeah.
You just thought football was always going to be like this.
Exactly. It's all been downhill from there.
Yeah. Ben?
Weirdly, like very, very first World Cup memory is from a World Cup long before I was born, and it's the 1974 World Cup final, which I was shown on repeat.
How
as
old
a child.
Are you?
I was shown on repeat as a child, Neeskens and Cruyff, and like, this is the best team to never win the World Cup. Shown that like repeatedly by my old fella. But the very first live World Cup is 2006.
Okay.
And I like was alive 2002, but I don't remember it unfortunately at all. I remember 2006. My standard memory of 2006 is like the final, and I remember sitting on the floor in my granddad's house when Zidane got sent off. And when you're that age, you know, you're just obsessed, infatuated with the best players in the world. And to see that happen to Zidane, I remember being heartbroken because you knew it was his last game, and you didn't really quite grasp that this is the last time you're going to see him. You just knew he was going away somewhere after this.
That was very early to have your heart broken by international football.
Yeah, I love international football though. I suppose that was it, wasn't it? It was set in from an early age to be there for these moments.
The weird thing for me is that like the first kind of World Cup game I remember watching is Ireland against Cameroon in 2002. But just have these weird memories of like what happened the day before and France being beaten by Senegal. Definitely didn't watch that game because we were all at school, or maybe it was just before we started school that Friday morning. But I'm not mistaken saying Ireland was the second game of that World Cup, the first game of day two. So like the shockwaves had been sent out from the France-Senegal game. And just I remember being vaguely aware of it despite having not watched the kick of that game. But that was it. That was the high bar. Ireland in a World Cup, thought it was going to be always
like
the case.
All the time.
It was Wales all the time and Ireland in a World Cup all the time.
But it is amazing how it penetrates. Like, you know, we sat here weeks ago talking about, you know, it's going to be Donald Trump, America, all these things that are going to make World Cup terrible. And you kind of forget that, you know, you do a version of that before every World Cup. And then, you know, you get to this point on the eve of it, or on the, you know, few, an hour beforehand, and everything else has disappeared. And you're like, none of you will remember this, but I always remember Eamon Dunphy before Ireland-England in 1990. His kind of voice, they went to him to set the scene, and his voice kind of cracked as he spoke about what a moment this was. And yet I always feel almost every World Cup, it kind of feels like that. You know, obviously that was special because it was Ireland's first World Cup. But whenever they come around, it's amazing how all the other nonsense kind of can fade away, and you're looking at the Azteca and you're looking at Mexico, and you're kind of thinking, right, this is like, this matters. And that's why it gets hijacked, because it matters. It's not hijacked because it's trivial. It's hijacked because everywhere in the world today, everyone is just like, you know, let's get ready for the World Cup.
There's something so big time as well about the way in which the traditional broadcast media goes after this. And I know it's kind of been a big talking point since last night, but the ITV set in Brooklyn, how big that is. Like, that even, when your brain starts thinking that way, you start to think about, like, the studios they had in front of, like, on Red Square in Moscow, and also Copacabana, and how those are also defining memories of a World Cup as well. Who are you watching, and where are they? Like, obviously, RT are not going to send a full studio to go to USA, Mexico and Canada, but they obviously would have done if Ireland had qualified. So you kind of have these more acute memories of the British broadcasters, because they're there en masse. Mm. Although I did think, I thought ITV were following BBC and not sending a studio team over. They obviously did a U-turn on that, because they're very clearly in the United States. But that's one of the things that stuck out. Also, just as a kind of a tangent, one of the storylines that I'm very keen to see over the course of this is Zlatan Ibrahimovic as a Fox Sports analyst over the course of these next few weeks. I mean, is there a chance that actually he's good and not completely dislikable?
Slim.
Yeah. Because it's the World Cup, I wonder, is there a place in our heart for somebody that we're always a little bit sceptical of?
Possibly. Yeah, it's funny that ITV set, and, you know, the British broadcasters setting a tone in different ways. Like, you know, the amount of clips that have gone around this week, if the algorithm works for you the way it works for me, of like opening credits of the BBC, you know, ITV, and like obviously the one that hits, like when they, you know, like when Ness and Dorma in 1990, and like, yeah, that sense of nostalgia, but also the sense of like what it was like to actually hear that for the first time when it became, you know, that was such a spectacular selection. Like, it was just, you know, it was almost an artistic work in itself to pick that as BBC's World Cup music, and it's, you know, those things, and they all add up, and they all add, and, you know, and all that stuff adds to the layers of importance of it. Like, it's you know, it's not in a vacuum. We have all our own, you know, all the RTE coverage, all the punditry, Ireland, Egypt, everything. Like, it all feeds into it. Like, it's part of, you know, you're not just going into this with like, you've got all that baggage to bring with you.
Yeah, I kind of feel like the RTE punditry, certainly for the vast majority of my football watching life, kind of peaks when you least expect it to peak, because we don't have any Republic of Ireland moments. Like, daytime Kenny Cunningham in 2010 would have been like a real staple, or maybe 2014. And it kind of feels like that's where you get the moment. It's going to be like Ghana, Panama next Wednesday in the middle of the night, where it's just going to be thrown up.
We're not live, are we, Bill?
Yeah. Flying Hellfish has commented on YouTube to say he enjoyed Ben's avant-garde segment last night. Ben did his bumper hipster / avant-garde preview of the World Cup yesterday. It's for free on YouTube if you want to check that out, and on podcast. All in the Game says World Cup should never be more than 32 teams. Hate this bloated 48 team nonsense. We haven't even seen a game yet. make your mind up afterwards. Shifty Lad says, lads, ranking jerseys for the World Cup. Is Mexico the nicest one?
It's in the top 10, yeah. It's like, what are you looking for, the whole 110 list? Or?
I just don't pay attention to jerseys. So what's catching the eye?
France home for me is just classy, elegance, as France kind of usually tend to go when they have a collar. Mexico is in the, you're really putting me in the spot here, but Mexico is in the top five. Brazil's, I think, is outstanding. There's this little green trim that just comes around the front and then it dips onto the lower back as well. That for me, Brazil always have lovely kits, but I feel like maybe it was 2010 or 2014. I wasn't too fond of the kit. This is right back to like classic Brazil. You can almost imagine the like circular number, Nike number in the middle of it. It's that type of kit. God, there's a couple more as well. Give me a minute. Come back to me and I'll have more. Because I had extensive research on this a couple of days ago. And there's honestly just too many good ones to pick. But if you are looking for a vast list of everything, don't click onto an American site, because they put the American kit in the top 10, the US home kit in the top 10 every single time, and is objectively bad.
Okay, that's a bit of bias there in the aggregation website stakes. Eve, we may as well get into the news round, because there's loads and loads happening, but it is matters in Mexico that you're starting with.
Yeah, so the 2026 World Cup begins tonight as co-host Mexico face South Africa at the Azteca Stadium. Opening ceremony has actually concluded by now, and performances, as we said, by Shakira and Burna Boy. The match kicks off, of course, at 8.
Yeah, the team's out for this. Raúl Jiménez, probably the standout star on the show tonight, on the pitch tonight, I should say, of the 22 players, he's definitely the standout. But as I say, we're live till 10 o'clock tonight. We'll keep you up to speed and everything that happens in that game. Now, we've been hearing from Pico Lopez.
Yep, so Shamrock Rovers defender Pico Lopez has been called up by Cabo Verde, the national team, for this summer's tournament. Lopez from Crumlin qualified to play for Cabo Verde through his father, Carlos, and their first match is against Spain at 5 p.m. on Monday, June 15th. And Lopez feels he's representing two countries at this World Cup.
I don't like take this like sentiment lightly. Like I do feel like I'm representing two countries at this World Cup. Like, and that's because as far I felt like, I think it's been saying the send off I got from the road I grew up on. Like that's something that'll stick with me forever. As I say, growing up on that road where I played football, played World Cups, and for every sort of like New Year's, birthdays, Christmas, Halloween, everyone was out on the street, and that's something that sort of died away as we started to get a bit older. Like, so to sort of bring it back to that sort of basis of everyone out there, and that was for me, that was a send me off just to wish me well. Like, that really sticks with me. Like, so I have that support from families and friends from Ireland where I live, and for a country that I'm representing at World Cup in Cape Verde, it really does like give me that lift and the same motivation to perform.
John in Dublin's been in touch to say, in terms of RTE punditry moments, remember Joe Kinnear, last thing before kickoff against Italy in 1994, Dunphy and Giles played it safe and predicted a draw, but Kinnear delivered the immortal line, total control of midfield, 1-0 Ireland. Were you at that, Dion? Or?
I wasn't, no.
No,
no, no.
So, I don't remember Kinnear as a pundit.
No, I was at, was that some of, I'm not sure if they had it for, maybe they did for every game, that was when RTE also had a live audience for some matches. I think there was a live audience for that game. Like, there's, when you see the footage of it, there's some games where there was a hand-picked audience of, you know, football fans and, you know, Johnny come latelys, as you can imagine. So like there was people, you know, and there was all sorts of, you know, the sports people in the crowd and in the audience. And so there was a sort of back and forth with it. But I don't know if they were for that game. Because I don't think Eamon Dunphy not on the panel for 94. I think it might have been a panel he missed.
Okay,
you do miss the days of RTE getting in like a random pundit in to do the World Cup. I was really hoping for someone a bit rogue for this one. I was looking at the BBC, brought in Olivier Giroud, Cesar Azpilicueta, like a really rogue person that you would not think to go up in front of the media at all.
You know how like every 4 years a player does really well at the World Cup, and then, you know, everyone's like, oh, unless you're really, really good, and everyone signs them. Which pundit? Will Zlatan Ibrahimovic be like the pundit version of a player who does really well at a World Cup?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, we were chatting to, we were getting the view from Mexico last night, and the lineup of pundits that they have on TV, Azteca, is absolutely off the chain good, where he was like talking about the fact that he'll be chilling with Jorge Valdano and Iker Casillas when he's presenting throughout the duration of the World Cup. I'm getting a little bit distracted here because I'm looking at tape from the 1994 World Cup, and I found Kinnear. I'm trying to picture who's in the middle here. It's certainly Giles. You're right, there is no Dunphy. And
Stapleton.
Stapleton. That would be it.
Yeah.
That would be it in the middle there, because it was, he was giving Kevin Moran vibes, which obviously couldn't have been the case. But yeah, so that was their three-person lineup with all the stars along the top of the desk in sort of a USA flag style studio. And then when you talk about the live audience aspect, it was very much in amongst the people, like the countrywide aspect, like the clip of Marty talking to fans, and there's a couple of viral moments from that throughout the tournament. That was a big part of their 94 coverage, if I'm
I can't remember. Yeah, it was, but 94, just, it seemed like 94 was, compared to 1990, everything, like it all seemed a little in the cover, everything seemed a little forced. Even then, if you go, you know, remember the homecoming at Phoenix Park, it was just, it just seemed that it wasn't the organic chaos of the 1990 homecoming. And obviously Ireland hadn't done as well. And it there wasn't the same mood in the country. Even though 94 now, when you look back on it, especially like beating Italy, is like one of the most outstanding, like the outstanding performance in from Ireland in a World Cup, but it wasn't the same, didn't create those same moments. And obviously 90 had everything in terms of a cultural experience, because you had Dunphy, the Ireland-Egypt game, the response to that, Dunphy going out to Italy, Jack Charlton refusing to talk to him, you know, everything, absolutely everything. So it was, and you can, you know, when you think about the emotional energy, like that was something that was like, that week was as if we had been sort of introduced to social media 30 years before social media came along, because the constant, everybody just arguing about this one thing, a culture war breaking out about Ireland, Egypt, and you know what it meant, and if Dunphy had said he was ashamed to be Irish, which he hadn't said, and all this kind of stuff. And it just went, it was just this incredible, you know, count, like our sort of parallel debate to the fact that, you know, there was still another, you know, Ireland was still in the World Cup, and it wasn't, but like, though that week was it's just an extraordinary week.
Let's move on. We're going to get more from Gianni Infantino on the football show tonight, Eve, but give us a top line on what he's been saying.
Yep. So yesterday, FIFA President Gianni Infantino told people to chill and relax about controversial topics that have dominated the build-up to this World Cup. He said it was unfortunate that Somali referee Omar Artan had been denied entry to the United States, but that there's only so much FIFA can do.
We try always to find solutions, but then we need to respect that we are not the kings of the world who can rule over governments and police forces and I don't know what. We are a sports organization. We try to do our best with the means that we have.
However, it was announced today that Omar Artan will take charge of Aston Villa's European Super Cup showdown with Paris Saint-Germain, as UEFA have chosen the 34-year-old to officiate in the game between the Europa League and Champions League winners in Salzburg on August 12th.
Now then, on to Celtic.
Yeah, so some good news for Celtic, I suppose. So Celtic have announced that Martin O'Neill is going to be their permanent manager. It will be his fourth stint at Celtic, 5 years from 2000 to 2005, and then two interim spells last year. The 74-year-old has agreed to stay with the Scottish champions on a one-year contract with the option for a second year. And the former Ireland boss won a league and cup double with the side last season.
Yeah, but they have been fined, the club.
They have. So they've also been fined £10,000 following pitch invasions by their fans in the final two Scottish Premiership matches. They will also lose 1,000 spectators for a home league game if there's a repeat of supporters spilling onto the pitch like they did against Hearts. The Scottish champions later issued an apology after visiting players left the stadium still in their kits because of the threatening atmosphere.
Now then, Wolves have wielded the axe.
They have. So Wolverhampton Wanderers have sacked head coach Rob Edwards. He's only been in charge since November, but couldn't keep his side from being relegated to the Championship. He oversaw just 5 wins in 30 matches. And Portuguese manager Cesar Peixoto is widely rumoured to be taking over.
Onto rugby then, there is an appointment in terms of the Leinster women's team.
Yes, so Sana Govender has been named as head coach of the Leinster women's senior team, replacing the outgoing Ben Martin. He has previously worked as a skills coach with Munster senior women's team and later as head coach of Railway Union FC. Govender says it is an honour and a privilege to be involved with the side.
And then finally, you might get an update on the golf.
Yeah, loads happening. So on the LPGA Tour, Leona Maguire and Lindsay Duncan finished with a score of 2 under par at the Dow Championship. There are other groups still finishing around them, and they're currently tied for fifth. And then it's day one of the Canadian Open in Toronto. Padraig Harrington and Seamus Power teed off just before 5:30, and Shane Lowry got his campaign underway at the later time of 6:10. He is currently 3 under par through 5 holes.
Okay, Eve, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Andrew's been in touch to say Maradona, age 21, was sent off in Spain 82 against Italy. He was targeted. And John in Waterford says, my first World Cup was 1966. The best was 1970, followed by 74 and 2022. The worst, 1990, despite loving it because of Ireland's heroics, and my first to attend. 0879 180 180 is our number. Any update on the jerseys, Ben?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked me. I was going to say it. Scotland's pink kit. It's a away kit. It's kind of like pink pinstripes, real Scotland throwback kit. And Curaçao's yellow kit, which is their away kit, which they are unfortunately not going to actually wear in the World Cup. They wore it against Scotland in Hampton Park the other week. It's an absolute cracker.
Okay, Scotland pink kit wins the day. Ben Symes, thank you very much for popping in. Dion Fanning will be with us throughout the night as well, as the teams are coming onto the pitch there in a sun-soaked Azteca. The news round has been brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 ml tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.